Weekdays from 5 a.m. Breakfast with Richard King.
And a pretty chilly start to the day. If you'd like to have a say, love to hear from you. Number to call is always 13 12 69. You can email richard at 2hd.com.au. And if you'd like to text our SMS number 0458 049 209. Well, the battle lines are certainly drawn out. Two major parties, many would say, taking a big gamble on our energy future. In the one corner, you've got the Labor Party's plan for a grid that by 2050, they're hoping it'll be powered almost entirely by renewables and backed by gas. And in the other corner, the coalition has gone nuclear, both insisting their plan's the best way of achieving the triple treat of cheaper, cleaner and reliable power. Many unknowns, many would say, for either side, and debatable whether to, you know, either way is going to achieve this. What we do know is power prices have risen sharply, driven largely, many say, by Russia's invasion of Ukraine, which sent coal and gas prices soaring. But it's politically problematic for a Labor government, which was elected on a promise, remember, to cut power bills by $275 on the 2021 levels by 2025. And that certainly looks like it's maybe unachievable. But yes, the debate's certainly raging now after the announcement yesterday by the coalition that if elected, they would create 7 nuclear reactors on sites where there are existing or already power stations that have closed. One of them being in my neck of the woods, Liddell. There'll be 2 in Queensland, 2 in New South Wales, 1 in Victoria, 1 in South Australia and 1 in Western Australia. And with more on that, joining me now is the Deputy Opposition Leader and Member for Farrer, Susan Lee, who's on the line. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning, Richard, and good morning to all of the people of the Hunter.
Our Energy Minister is going to be in my neck of the woods today announcing the proposed tenders for this Hunter offshore wind zone, which certainly Peter Dutton and David Littleproud have said it won't happen if you're elected, the LNP is elected. But there are many private investors that are willing to put money into renewables, but as far as I know, there aren't any that are prepared to put money into either retaining coal-fired power stations or building nuclear reactors, Susan?
Well, Richard, I'm not interested in returns for private investors, some of them green billionaires from overseas. I'm interested in the cost of electricity for average Australians, and that's absolutely skyrocketing. And the other thing we want to make clear about this announcement, because as usual, there's been a lot of misinformation already, is that it does have at its core close community consultation. So 2.5 years of talking with the community about all of the details. And so far, what I've seen from your region is a smash-and-grab offshore wind farm proposal from the Labor government with a sham consultation that I think went for about 2 months. That's not how you do things. I'm a regional MP. The Hunter is a region. It's important that we recognise that we need to develop our regional economic zones in Australia and do that well. And that's one of the reasons why this is such a good thing for regions, because at its heart there will be an economic zone, as I said, with cheap electricity, with new industry, with higher skilled jobs and huge advantages for the region where these nuclear power plants will end up being.
Okay, you talk about you're not interested in returns for private investors, but if private investors aren't involved, it's taxpayers that are going to be footing the bill. And at this stage, we have no idea what this is going to cost, your proposal announced yesterday.
Well, internationally, we do see governments at the centre of the build and ownership of nuclear power. And one of the reasons is that if you're a private company, you're looking for a return over, you know, maybe 20 years or 30 years at the most. The lifetime of a nuclear reactor is 80 to 100 years, and that does lend itself to government being managing and controlling that really long lifetime of investment. So we're not proposing that we do things radically different from how it's worked in France, in Canada and in many other countries.
Well, you mentioned France, but I mean, and many of these European countries have been involved in building nuclear reactors since the 60s and 70s. We're starting from ground zero, and at the moment it's legislated that it can't happen. I mean, there are many obstacles before you even get to the start line, Susan. I mean,
there are.
All the state premiers came out and said yesterday, you know, we don't want this to happen. Even local councils, mayors and Lord Mayors have come out and said, no, look, we've had a policy here of no nuclear. So there are many hurdles ahead before you can even get to thinking about building one.
Yes, but that's not a reason to walk away from doing the right thing. And I know that that's been the instinctive reaction of many, and some of them are listening to misinformation from the Labor Party. We'll make our case calmly and quietly and try to keep the silly childish nonsense that we're seeing from Anthony Albanese, who's showing pictures of beaches and rainforests and telling people there'll be a nuclear reactor there. You know, remember, Australia already is a nuclear nation. We have a nuclear reactor in Lucas Heights in suburban Sydney. The government has signed agreements that will mean that our sailors will sleep next to a Navy reactor on an AUKUS submarine, and all of the waste from those submarines will be stored in Australia. So a lot of the concerns people are raising, I think, can be assuaged with, as I said, a sensible, realistic debate. Now, the reactors of the past that some of our overseas countries have been involved in, sure, these are Generation 3 and subsequent reactors, and that technology is developing all the time, and by having the partnerships internationally with the companies that know what that technology is and how to build these reactors, that will put us well and truly at the forefront of doing this efficiently and well, so that we can do what we often do with technology in Australia, and is by being at the leading edge internationally.
Right, but I mean, still, when you're talking about the cost and cheaper electricity, we have no idea at this stage what this is going to cost. And look, I dare say you don't either, Susan.
The cost will come, Richard, and yes, it is a significant investment, but guaranteeing a future for the Hunter and for the nation is worth every dollar. And I want to come back to local communities and jobs, because again, where we've replaced coal-fired power overseas with nuclear, we've seen 77% of the jobs from the coal transition to nuclear, but more importantly, the salaries have gone up by as much as 60% because of the highly skilled nature of the jobs. And, you know, you don't secure the regions without industry and jobs. Those of us who live in the region see that all around us. And contrast that with what the Prime Minister has proposed. He's talking about 82% renewables by 2030. Now, to do that, you have to bring on something like 4.5 gigawatts of wind and solar every year. They're already hopelessly behind with that. So their program to actually achieve what they say they're going to deliver is woefully inadequate. And if they're not going to be able to do that, then how on earth are we going to secure our manufacturing industries? How on earth are we going to keep power prices down for average households? You've got people in your region who live on low and fixed incomes, and they're going to get electricity bills this winter that are going to make them think carefully about heating or eating. And that's not the Australia I want to live in, and I don't accept that you can have a completely renewable grid with hydrogen. Is that what the Prime Minister's talking about? I mean,
well, they're also talking about gas. To be fair, they're also talking about gas, and
they have to.
And the coalition has to, but there was no mention of gas yesterday.
I think there was. Gas is important. It's absolutely part of what we're saying.
Right. Do you think we should be building more of these gas peaking plants? There's one that should be completed by the end of this year, just up the road from where I am at Currycurry. And I mean, the beauty of these is you can turn them on and off very quickly, a bit like your gas stove. Surely you should be talking about building more of those. I mean, if we're not going to have at the earliest a nuclear power plant until about, well, I think yesterday it was announced between 2035 and 2037. In the meantime, I think both Labor and yourself are agreeing we need gas as a transition fuel.
Yes, and if we look at it as renewables plus gas plus coal, we'll shift to a future energy mix of renewables plus gas plus nuclear. So gas is front and centre of our plan. The difference between ourselves and Labor is, you might remember when they came into government, they demonised gas. They went to war with the gas industry. That resulted in a lack of confidence and supply of gas in terms of our international partners and investment in gas, which is critical. So they're talking about it because they have to. They know they can't reach this renewable target, even though they've not officially said so. The point is that if you have a gas strategy that doesn't actually have a strategy, I mean, it's like a document that I opened that was nothing actually in there. They're not explaining it properly. Every time they talk, they say they're going to give a deliver the mix via renewables only, and that's not done anywhere in the world.
All right. Well, what's your strategy, re-gas? I mean, I know certainly when you were in power, Keith Pitt was very much in favour of agreeing to the PEP 11 exploration licence off the coast of here of the Hunter and Sydney. As we now know, Scott Morrison had taken on that portfolio and put the kibosh on that. Are you still in favour of that PEP 11? Because it's still in play. The company after that is still trying to get the okay for that. Would you be in favour of exploration of gas offshore?
As with any project that is environmentally sensitive and has strong community views, we would always listen to those community views. So you don't have to get gas in one location. There are a whole range of options across the entire country. The Beetaloo Basin is being opened up in Central Australia as we speak. So there are many, many options with gas. But this is a government that has always demonised gas, that has always laughed at gas, that has effectively chased away investment in gas in this country. And that's become a huge problem for them. And the other thing, Richard, I just want to mention is just remember, while I'm passionate about manufacturing and industry, and I stand on factory floors across this country every day, and I listen to the heartbreak of people who are, forced to close their business. There's more being mentioned in the media today that are saying, we can't do this anymore because of the cost of energy. That's one aspect of this that's vital. But the other is to reach zero, net zero by 2050. And you've got a lot of people in your region who are passionate about the environment. I know, because as environment minister, I visited there frequently. And you can't do this in our view and in the expert view without using nuclear. So if we want to actually play our part in decarbonising our grid and supporting the whole planet in reducing emissions, this is, this does absolutely tick that box.
Right. You spoke about community consultation. When will that begin?
Well, we're not in government yet. What we outlined yesterday, straight away, as soon as we win the election, and of course that's got to happen first, and we don't know when the election is. We'll work very hard to make our case to the Australian people. But should we be fortunate enough for them to vote us in, and Richard, I believe they will, because I believe they're seeing just a country running off the rails under this Labor Prime Minister. At that point, that community consultation will start. There will be a government business entity called Affordable Energy Australia. So we'll have technical expertise, but there'll also be local community representation. And as I said, a consultation period that will go for 2.5 years of that community engagement, detailed technical analysis, and coming up with a preferred concept for each location and so on.
Right. But the reality is, at the next election, you would have to gain control of both the House of Reps and the Senate to be able to overturn the existing legislation that prevents any of this happening.
If you look at how public opinion on nuclear energy has moved, even just in the last 2, 3, 4 years, I believe that the mandate will exist for both parties to take this on and to put aside the nonsense that has seen Labor's current energy policy. So if a government is elected with a mandate, then the Parliament, and that includes both Houses of Parliament, has to respect that mandate.
Right. And what do you say to the criticism that it's very dangerous to put all your eggs in the one basket to win power at the next election, i.e. the eggs in the one basket being nuclear, a nuclear future for Australia?
All the eggs in one basket are the government's renewable eggs in one basket right now. I mean, that is absolutely what they are doing. Look, this is a cost of living policy as well as a emissions reduction policy. So it's also setting us up for a manufacturing and industry future that we just don't have under Anthony Albanese. So there are many aspects to it. It's not just about the simplicity, if you like, of nuclear versus something else. There's far more implications for our economy as a whole. We can do so much better than that, than this, under how Anthony Albanese is carrying on. He is saying we will have a future made in Australia. But, Richard, I don't see a future made for Australia in this Labor government when he can't even keep the lights on. And as I said, I visit manufacturers all the time. I was talking to people who were explaining that we barely have an industry in this country that can produce soft plastics anymore because of the closure of Qenos in Sydney and the unaffordable energy policy of this government. I was standing in a timber yard in Tasmania a few days ago where we're exporting beautiful Tasmanian ash to China to be, or Malaysia, to be manufactured into something, perhaps furniture, and then sent back to this country. I could go on with example after example, and I know they'd resonate with your listeners in your region. Right. We can do better than this.
Yeah. Look, on a much lighter note, the last time I spoke to you, I did reference the Tullyback Hotel, which is in your electorate, because it had won the award for best chicken schnitzel parmy. You hadn't tried it, but you said you wanted to. Have you had a chance to try the schnitty at the Tullyback Hotel yet?
I haven't tried this, but it's still very high on my list, and I don't want to just call out the Tullyback Hotel, because everywhere you go in my electorate of Farah along the Murray and Murrumbidgee Rivers, we have amazing, amazing food and some pretty good wine as well.
All right. Thank you very much for your time this morning. It's certainly going to be hotly debated, the future of energy supply in Australia, but I appreciate your time this morning. Have a good day, Susan.
Thanks so much, Richard.
Deputy Opposition Leader, Member for Farah, Susan Lee, at 20...